ooze.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
Ow!
Dude, check out the knots.
It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Let's go, Tybalt! Great adventures await!
Hello, and welcome to Dystopian Dance Party, one of the least updated podcasts on the internet. I'm Callie.
And I am Zach.
There's such a huge delay. If you're not familiar with us, Dystopian Dance Party is a bit of everything. We are most infamous for hating Kiss and loving 80s R&B or Jerry Crew music. We started out by reading all four Kiss biographies and discussing them, and we also watched a Mike Myers movie a month for a year in our one of our worst ideas, 12 Months of Mike. Well, against our better judgment, we are unfortunately returning to that format. This time, we are doing a deep dive into the weasel himself, Pauly Shore. 2024 is
the year of the weasel.
With the absolute shit show that the 2020s have been so far, millennials, Gen Xers, and Gen Z alike have been self-medicating with a healthy dose of 90s and early 2000s nostalgia. A lot of my time the last few years was spent collecting some of the toys I had as a kid, replaying SNES and N64 games, and watching Encino Man several times.
Yes, and in true millennial fashion, we don't know how to do just have these experiences, so we're making them into content. I come into this with some trepidation because we took 2023 off. And during that time, you know, people would be like, hey, what are you guys up to? What are you doing? And I know that different people probably had different thoughts in mind about what they wanted us to do, but I know that nobody asked for this.
We responded with a very cryptic and threatening picture of Pauly Shore.
Which has been our Instagram, Abby, for like a year, because we've been talking about this for a year. So it was a weird viral marketing that nobody saw, which is very on brand for us. But I want to, I mean, first of all, it's not a permanent change of direction. I know that we briefly hit a stride with Headbangers Book Club, and that's honestly probably what most people would rather we be doing right now. But we're the Neil Young of podcasting. We go where the wind blows us. And in this case, this is for some reason, the wind is blowing us.
If the shore is taking us, it's taking us to the shore. If someone has the Encino Man book, that's like Stony Diary, the Encino like Man book, I don't know exactly what it is, but if someone can track that down and send us to us, we will do that for Headbangers Book Club.
And let me tell you something. If nobody out there has it, because this will save me a trip to DC, but guess what does have it? The Library of Congress. And so I am going
that's
to go.
True.
I'm imagining that. Like, because you can be a registered reader at the Library of Congress. I'm imagining that somebody will, like, take it out in white gloves. And I'll have to turn, and they'll have to turn the pages for me. So that will be it. Like, I'm actually, in a way, looking forward to this experience. We will definitely be talking about Stoney's Encino High Journal, the junior novelization tie-in to Encino Man. We're already off the rails. And I even came into this saying I wasn't going to talk about Encino Man because we have other things to talk about today. But look at me, like, I can't help but talk about Encino Man.
Well, I brought it up to be fair.
All right. So this is where we're, you know, where our heads are at right now. And we also have an ulterior motive, which is to present the argument that Pauly Shore is good against all evidence to the contrary. This comes with some caveats. We're not comedy nerds. Neither of us are. You know, I like to laugh. I enjoy stand-up comedy sometimes. It's not my favorite form of entertainment. I'm not super knowledgeable about it. You know, I'm not going to try to make the case that he's a Richard Pryor or a George Carlin, if indeed that case is possible to make. If somebody's going to make that case, it's not going to be me. Also, this is key. Neither of us have watched anything past Biodome, and I haven't watched anything past Class Act. So by the end of this, we might end up doing a total 180, and it's just 12 months of Mike all over again, and we're just like, fuck this guy. But as of right now, this is a Pauly Shore positive space. And I'm encouraged a little bit too, because the other day I shared one of the many haggard looking Pauly Shore photos we've been sharing on the Dystopian Gram account. And my internet friend, Anna, responded to me. And she was like, I've been watching his stand-up on TikTok and I love him so much. I love him just as much now as I did when I was 7. And Anna is like, she's definitely someone who would know if Pauly Shore had done something that should get him canceled. So I was like, okay, good. I'm not going to, you know, this isn't going to like blow up on me halfway through.
Kanisa also said that she was excited.
So that's two people. Two people are excited about this.
And I don't know your friend, but I, for the most part, respect Kanisa's opinion. So,
you know, and I think actually this is kind of relevant to my next point, which I don't want to jinx this. I don't want to jinx our podcast or Pauly Shore's career. But I think we may be on the cusp of a Pauly Shore Renaissance. I'm seeing some grassroots enthusiasm for Pauly Shore coming from people other than me and Callie. I'm doing research for this podcast. I was consistently amazed by how much Pauly Shore content there is on YouTube. Now,
steadily,
some of that,
uploaded.
A lot of it is from Pauly Shore himself. Yeah. Yeah. Now, Pauly himself has like 3 YouTube accounts, so he's responsible for some of it, but as far as I can tell, not all. And I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out right at the top of the show to Totally Pauly Fan on YouTube, because they've been adding
another Pauly Shore fan or another Pauly Shore account.
It could be Pauly Shore's alt account, but I've been. In preparation for this show, I've been trying to create a constant state of like of weasel exposure for myself. So I've just been sitting at my desk at work and just putting on Totally Pauly episodes or episodes of his new podcast and just having, you know, just I'm trying to do something. And just in the background is it's major grindage. And so that's what I've been trying to do to get into character. And there's new episodes popping up like every day. So Totally Pauly Fan.
Literally every
on
day.
YouTube, possibly Pauly himself.
The last time I was on YouTube 12 hours ago, there was a new one where he goes shrimping.
So there's an audience for this. There might not be an audience for this, but there's an audience for Pauly is what I'm saying. And you know, way more Pauly Shore fans than I ever would have thought. And I have a slight sociological theory for this. I think the weasel is a man of our times. I think, you know, like Callie alluded to, we're all being ground under the boot heel of late capitalism. Our institutions are failing us. We're coming closer and closer to a climate apocalypse. And a lot of millennials and the generations behind us, present company included, are responding to this by becoming less ambitious. I think the slacker archetype is kind of making a resurgence, because more and more of us are sort of becoming radicalized and realizing that maybe we don't want to do well in this society that is, you know, pretty much horrible from tip to tail. So increasingly, I'm in this space where I don't want to climb the corporate ladder. I just want to be a stony, crusty dude with the mop on top. And I think a lot of us are feeling that right now. So this is,
and in some cases,
this is for everybody who can identify with that.
In some cases, the disillusionment comes from the inability to climb the corporate ladder and just inherently being a stony, crusty dude with a mop on top and finally, like, feeling validated.
That's why this is, I don't know if we've explained anything, but this is why we're doing this to ourselves and to you. And I'm hoping that by the end of this, I mean, hopefully it won't take the full year, but by, I'm hoping that as we go forward,
it's just so fun. Mop on top. He says it so much. Like in everything, not just in Encino Man. That comes up a lot. It's the first line in Lisa Lisa. You're the one for me or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Especially since we both have the mop on top. Like that's, I think that's yeah, why we were born like, to do this podcast.
I felt instantly validated, if nothing else than by Pauly Shore's style.
And we're going to talk about that. I think, you know, we're every, he's got some looks, man. And so we'll be talking about that for sure. That's one of the many issues we'll be weighing in on. So the podcast is called Year of the Weasel. If you're here, if you signed up for this, you probably have some idea of what that means, but I think we should probably get into what the weasel is. Short version is it's Pauly Shore's, it's the alter ego that made Pauly Shore famous. I don't know what, why don't you tell me, Callie, what you,
what the weasel means for me?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't know enough about Pauly Shore as a person, but it feels like something very close to his normal personality, but maybe a little more of just like a like amiable stoner who's just like funny. Sometimes he's kind of like more confident than he has the right to be. Like, okay, for example, most of my research has come from just constantly watching Totally Pauly for the last like week. But there was an episode where he was hanging out with some hockey guy, like professional hockey players, and acting like he was a great hockey player and he wasn't. And they humbled him and he continued to kind of like mock him and act like he was a good hockey player. There's no reason for him to think he was a good hockey player, but he just thinks he's good at it and then fails, but continues to think he's okay. So he's very just like confident and cool with not being good at stuff. He kind of like mocks people, and he's also a loser. He often gets dumped into trash cans and dumpsters. But he still just like has this amazing bonhomie about him and can communicate and be nice with in the Shrimpin' episode, he was kind of like flirting with the 40-year-old, lady on the shrimp boat or something. It was very like cute and just, I don't know. He just seems like a cool dude to hang out with. And that's the weasel.
He's sort of a complex figure. He's a rich, a rich character, because there's a little bit of self-deprecation in him, but also a lot of confidence. I think what I don't identify with the weasel so much as envy him to an extent, just the ease with which he navigates the world, despite these obstacles, you know, like despite constantly being thrown into trash cans or being rejected by the nugs that he's hitting on or whatever the case may be.
The leases.
You know, he faces all of this rejection. Yeah. But he has this calm and there's this ease about him that as a, you know, really neurotic person, I wish I had more of that in me. So obviously he's like from the surfer dude archetype, you know, straight like from the Spicoli and Fast Times at Ridgemont High lineage. We talked about this a little bit back when we did 12 Months of Mike, when we talked about Wayne's World. I think about these like surfer, stoner, you know, slacker dudes as a spectrum with kind of like Bill and Ted on one end. And that's like totally carefree, no responsibilities, just like happy to be alive and be friends and, you know, listen to sweet guitar licks or whatever. And then Wayne and Garth are on the other end of that spectrum, which is like still pretty chill, but you know, they're not from San Dimas. They're from Aurora, Illinois/Canada. And there's more angst, you know, there's a little more neurosis. Like these guys are a little, they're kind of like, these are the products of angry nerds pretending to be carefree rocker dudes. And I think the Weasel sits somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, but definitely closer to the Bill and Ted end. And you know, he's a trickster figure. And that's how Henry Louis Gates would describe him. He's, you know, the Weasel. He's inherently someone who is kind of trying to scam,
where he's like trickster or jester. He's like,
he speaks truth to power.
Yeah, I think he does. He got his show on MTV when it was one of the dumbest things on there, and somehow made it work.
And so, I mean, we can move on. Here's some stuff I found. A couple of articles. So there's a 1991 article from the Boston Globe by Jim Sullivan. It's called "Hey Dude, the Weasel is like the future of America." So this was kind of like written at the peak of Weasel Mania, or right when Weasel Mania was about to hit its peak, I think. So at this point, you know, Paulie was a big deal on MTV. He had his comedy album out, which is called Future of America. He was about to be casted in Encino Man. So this article is interesting. And just for the record, before it looks like I did too much research, I found this as a footnote on Wikipedia, so I didn't look at that hard for it. But the article is interesting, though, because it's very much written from the perspective of a bewildered and slightly disapproving adult. There's a lot of like generation gap moral panic baked into this. Like, what is wrong with the, you know, kids of today? They don't speak English, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think
there's some lines in here that kind of right. There's some lines in here that kind of get at who the Weasel is. So he says, "Pauly Shore, entertaining and annoying, dopey and clever, is the Cheech and Chong of his generation. On stage, Shore presents himself as a stoner working a scam, not a complicated scam, and not working too hard. Pauly Shore, the character that is Pauly on stage, is just not that smart. He's just a guy trying to get by on no skills, minimal brain power, and more nap time." There's another article that you're going to hear me talk about a lot, which came out in Spin magazine in October 1999. So this was like, you know, post-decline, when Pauly was, you know, he'd kind of hit rock bottom and he was trying to rebuild his career at this point. So it's a retrospective from that perspective. And it's called Behind the Weezic because it's written in the style of a Behind the Music episode. But I think this kind of nails what sets the Weasel apart a little bit from the other, Bill and Ted types. It says the Weasel had his own private language and a freestyle approach to pronunciation, a fashion sense borrowed from Nikki Sixx and the matrons of Rodeo Drive, and a desire for the finer things in life, which to great comic effect, he never quite fulfilled. So as we go, obviously we'll unveil more layers of the Weasel. I think this is one of the possibly one of the great literary characters of the 20th century, if not Western culture.
I just want to say one more thing about the Weasel, that it's interesting because he has like the surfer, like skater, like way of speaking and dressing and stuff. And he has like a either overt or not so overt, like stoner image, but he neither does drugs nor skates or surfs.
That is very true. Like, especially in the movies, right? Cause you know, he had a contract with Disney. So we'll talk about this in Encino Man, but, his character is named Stoney, and we never see him with a joint ever. It's very it's actually very noticeable once you realize it. So it is an interesting, yeah, and it like it makes his character kind of fluid because and we'll see in this episode we're going to talk about some of the kind of the different roles that he played before he became the fully formed Weasel. And we'll see that, you know, sometimes he's a surfer, sometimes he's a metalhead, sometimes he's a punk. You know, it's just like any kind of vaguely alternative Southern California thing from the late 80s, early 90s, Pauly Shore is able to kind of slide into that archetype. All right, so we're going to watch 12-ish movies. I'm not I'm hedging my bets a little bit because we're not super familiar with his post Biodome filmography. And I don't want to create a situation like 12 Months of Mike where we said we were going to watch four Shrek movies and we were stuck watching four Shrek movies. You know, like I want us to be able to bail out if we have to.
That was definitely part of the humor was the test of endurance that watching four Shrek movies was.
So, you know, it's an option. I think the ones that I'm definite about are definitely Encino Man, and we're folding in Class Act, which was not really starring. It's not really a Pauly Shore vehicle, but we're also big fans of the Kid and Play cinematic universe. So I think, you know, we have to squeeze in Class Act. And also it's like his appearance in Class Act is fucking surreal. So I feel like we'd be remiss not to talk about it. So Encino Man, Class Act, we've got to watch Son-in-Law. We got to watch In the Army Now, Jury Duty. We'll watch the two Goofy movies. We're going to put those together because I can't imagine that there's that much to talk about.
I don't think that the Leaning Tower of Cheese will make two episodes.
We'll carry two episodes, yeah. We'll watch Biodome. We'll watch Pauly Shore is Dead is the one like ladder career movie that I definitely want to watch because it's sort of like, it sort of comments on his whole situation with his career in a way that seems interesting to me. And also, we got to fucking watch Pinocchio. Have you seen that shit? Have you seen like clips of Pinocchio? It was apparently a meme in 2022.
That was actually, I think, what started getting me back into Pauly Shore stuff was that when I worked at the comic shop, one of my coworkers was talking about the Pauly Shore Pinocchio, and I was like, what? I haven't watched the movie, but I have fucking wild. Watched the trailer.
I hadn't seen the trailer until today, and I watched it and I was like, Jesus Christ, this is insane. And people like there were people doing like super cuts because I mean, you know, the joke's a little like, I think the reason why it became a meme is a little bit fucked up because everybody thought Pinocchio sounded gay.
Father, when can I leave to be on my own? I've got the whole world to see.
And he kind of does, you know, because Pauly Shore is doing a little bit of an effeminate voice. No disrespect to Pinocchio or whatever sexual orientation he has. But aside from the gay jokes, it's just, I can't wait to see it. It just looks so yeah.
Really,
so
I'm really
wonderfully
excited
bad.
About that. And that'll kind of be our like parallel with Shrek. Everyone gets like a CGI movie.
Exactly. And we'll watch it four times. And I think there's also like he did one where he adopted two African babies. Oh,
yeah. I forgot about the African baby one.
We'll probably have to watch that one too. I want to try to track down his sitcom from 97. Which was officially the thing that destroyed his career. That and Biodome is kind of a 1-2 punch.
That, it'll probably be a mini episode, but we can probably watch the music videos he was in. Cause there's a Limp Bizkit video. I think there were two Limp Bizkit videos. And then I definitely like independent of any of this project, I found a Young Buck video that he was in for some reason.
That's actually a good idea because like my vision for this is, it's going to be 12 months, right? But I think we're going to try to make the episodes more like bi-weekly. So maybe we can do, you know, like an episode about Encino Man and Class Act, and then we could do an extra episode for the second half of the month, which is that's when I'll go to the Library of Congress and get against Stoney's Encino High Journal, the one copy that is preserved.
I do want to do more of a deep dive of Totally Polly, at least in one of the bonus episodes, especially the one where he goes to Paisley Park.
That's a good idea, because I've been trying to immerse myself in Totally Polly, but there's so much of it. There's 500 episodes. So so yeah, I think that's a good idea to give ourselves a little runway. For now, though, just like we did with Mike Myers, I think looking at his earlier material will allow us to put the movies into context a little bit more. I mean, one thing that really struck me in preparing for this is that that I didn't realize, because I was 8 when Encino Man came out. So by the time he made that movie, he was already a pretty big star, you know, like pretty household name. He had a successful MTV show. He had a stand-up album. He had a novelty single with a music video, Lisa Lisa. And I think what you'll see when we talk about Encino, both Encino Man and Class Act, is that they literally just took his persona. They took Totally Polly the Weasel and just inserted him into these movies, full fledged, like just copy paste. So I think it's sort of worth going into this, you know, here's the material that made the casting people from Encino Man want to put him in that movie. And I think it's also interesting because we can see this character, this complex layered figure that is the Weasel, take shape before our eyes. So that's what we're going to spend the rest of this episode doing. A lot of this stuff I've only watched because I always take it upon myself to, like, I feel really committed to watch everything or at least try to watch everything. So there's going to be this is going to be a very Zach heavy 20 minutes or whatever. However long the rest of the episode is.
And the special he did. So I haven't watched much pre-Weasel Polly stuff. Although I did watch some of like the clips where he shows up. So I've seen like handfuls of it.
I'll try to be efficient though, because I mean, honestly, most of this is, you know, there's not much to discuss. So a little bit of biographical background. He was born Paul Montgomery Shore in Hollywood, California on February 1st, 1968. His father is Sammy Shore. The Spin magazine article, which is by a guy named Greg Bieto, Beyond the Weezick, described his father as a Jewish lounge comic who opened for the likes of Elvis and Sammy Davis Jr. He describes his mother, Mitzi Shore, as a restless housewife from Wisconsin. In 1972, Polly's father, Sammy Shore, co-founded the West Hollywood comedy club, The Comedy Store. 2 years later, his parents divorced, and his mother, Mitzi, became the Comedy Store's owner as part of the settlement. And so this is like a really key, I mean, for a couple of reasons, this is a key part of like the Weasel mythology, because the Weasel, no matter what project he's in, his parents are always divorced.
Mr. Morgan, if you're edge because I'm wheezing on your grind, it's just chill. Because if I had the whole Brady Bunch thing happen at my pad, I'd go grind over there. So don't tax my gig so hardcore, Custer.
English, they only speak English.
His mom shows up a lot. Like, his mom is at the beginning of the both of the comedy albums that I've listened to. Did you see the episode of Totally Polly where he goes, he takes his mom's credit card and he's like...
I did not see that one yet.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one yet, but I do like that a lot of our conversations are now, did you see this episode of Totally Polly yet? Have you seen the one where he goes shopping?
Yeah, well, point is, the Weasel's parents are always divorced. He's always, you know, his mom is always in the picture somewhere. So these have kind of become core parts of the mythology. And also another big part of the mythology is that he basically, because his dad was on the road touring, doing comedy for most of the year, and his mom was running this very popular comedy club, Polly basically grew up at the Comedy Store. So he had this very non-traditional childhood where he was hanging out with comedians he probably shouldn't have been hanging out with, and, you know, just experiencing things that are very different for a child, you know. And one example from the Spin article is at one point he was on a Little League team with Bob Dylan's son, Smokey Robinson's son, and Donna Summer's nephew. So probably unsurprisingly, he ends up making his own stand-up comedy debut in 1985 at age 17 at a place called the Alley Cat Bistro in Culver City. That apparently went well. There's, you know, no footage of any of this because it's just a different time where not every comedy set was recorded. But he spent about a year performing at smaller clubs, and then he auditioned for his mom to perform at the Comedy Store. And in the Spin article, he told Beato, "I ended with a pop rocking breaking Jewish rap thing that killed, but the stand up was bad. And basically my mom told me to give it up and go to college." So that's kind
of also the reason that one of his comedy tours, like his more recent comedy tours, is called, I should have did more research, but I don't remember what it was called, but it was something like Stick to Dancing, because apparently that's what his mom said to him.
That's what his mom
stick to dancing, stick to the popping and locking. I don't know if that was the best advice either, but.
Well, I mean, I will say I find Pauly Shore's dancing funnier than his stand-up. And that's not a serious criticism. That's just, I think it comes up for a couple of reasons. One of which is it's sort of, you know, the elephant in the room with Pauly Shore is that, like, of course he got famous. His mom owned the Comedy Store, you know? So like, yes, he's a Nepo baby. I'm sure that he benefited from all kinds of opportunities that other comics would have killed for and never got. You know, that's like, we can't avoid that. And I do think that stories like this can sometimes be sort of strategically deployed so that it's like, no, really, his mom thought he sucked, you know? So it's like he had to work his way up because even his mom didn't care for it. But I think also it kind of speaks to what makes his comedy unique, because what makes Totally Pauly, I think, really magnetic to watch, is it's not really about what he's saying. It's just about his like vibe. It's not really about the jokes. It's not even really about the way he pronounces things, although that is like a big part of his shtick. It's just, he's good at just like exuding a certain energy, and seeing that come into contact with different types of people is, I think, really interesting to watch. So it's really feels like
people are either charmed or annoyed by him.
Right. And both possibilities are equally funny.
It reminds me of like, just like hanging out with your friends and like hanging out with your funny friend who just is doing silly stuff. Like when you're in high school or whatever.
Right.
Even like sometimes like the cameraman will extend a hand and he'll like hold, like, you know, like give the hand a high five or whatever. So it's literally like you as the viewer,
right?
Like you're the surrogate, like like cameraman or like friend or whatever.
Right.
Like
the cameraman's part of it.
Analog for you.
It's very earnest. And I think watching it now, it's really interesting because it feels like a predecessor to YouTube and to all of this, and, you know, podcasts, and to this sort of this new media that is not really about jokes. It's about kind of having that relationship with the person. So Totally Pauly feels very groundbreaking to me in that way. And I know a lot of people listening to this will be like, well, yeah, YouTube fucking sucks. Like, why should we be giving Pauly Shore his flowers for inventing something that sucks ass? But I don't know. I think it certainly can suck, but I think also that Pauly Shore is a more fun hang than a lot of YouTubers, at least the ones that I see. So, you know, I think there's a place for it. So despite being rejected by his mom, he continued to work on comedy, started landing some small movie and TV roles. This is the most research I've done for this podcast. This is possibly the most research I've ever done for anything Dystopian Dance Party related. I went through IMDb, his whole IMDb credits in chronological order, and found as much as many of these roles as I possibly could watch. So the earliest that I could find was in a season two episode of 21 Jump Street from 1987 called Two for the Road. He played a character called Kenny Ryan. I'm not a 21 Jump Street expert, but basically the storyline is there are these high school kids getting fake IDs and buying alcohol, which is of course very dangerous because then they drive and, you know, there's at one point some kid dies. Another thing to mention is that when I say that I watched these, I kind of had them on during my workday and sort of half paid attention to them while I was doing other things.
Pauly Shore was on screen and then put your head back down.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then some of them I literally scrubbed through to find Pauly Shore. So I'm not an expert on any of this stuff, but he plays this character, Kenny Ryan, who is not yet the weasel. Just a regular scrawny teen who loves to party. There's a line, where during the early party scene where he gets this really serious face and he says to his friend, Doug,
I have to urinate.
So that's probably the standout line from his appearance on 21 Jump Street.
Why not just pee? Like, why is he being so clinical?
I know. That's the magic. I wonder if it was as written. See, if this is like, these are the questions that, if I were to get the opportunity to interview Pauly Shore, I would ask him stuff like this. I would really dig deep. In 1988, he appeared as a character named Retro in Four Keeps, a movie starring Molly Ringwald as a teenager who gets pregnant. I can't find that movie streaming anywhere for free, and I will not spend money on it. So I'm just going to say that my headcanon is Retro is probably a stoner who wears bell bottoms and goes to the same school as Molly Ringwald. And I feel like 85% confident that I'm right. So moving on to a movie that I have seen, he played a character named Barrett in 18 Again, starring George Burns. That is, I would stop short of saying I recommend 18 Again, but it is on Tubi, so you can watch it for free. And it is a deeply weird movie about an 18-year-old played by Charlie Schlatter, who switches bodies with his 81-year-old grandfather, played by George Burns, who on the occasion of his 81st birthday sings this weird and apparently self-composed song about how he wishes he was 18 again, and then gets in a car accident with his 18-year-old grandson behind the wheel, and somehow through a combination of the magic of the song and the car accident, they switch bodies. George Burns, the grandson in George's Burns's body is now in a coma. So I just want to take note of this. The first time I told Callie about this, she pointed out that this is a body swap movie without any of the inherent hijinks of bodies being swapped. There's really only one swap going on. Yeah, one of the guys is just in a coma. Yeah, the whole time. And I feel like there's
the alternative is that you get to be in a very old man's body. Like, why does he have to be 81? I guess because it's the
this is George Burns, but yeah. But I mean, well, as many questions. What? Why does it have to be George Burns? You know. So this movie, and you'll notice we're not talking about Pauly Shore. That's because Pauly Shore barely matters in this movie. He's literally just friends with Charlie Schlatter's character, and he's like his sidekick. He literally, Charlie Schlatter does graffiti art, and Pauly's character literally holds the bucket of paint for Charlie Schlatter's character.
Why isn't he using spray paint?
I do not know.
He's doing graffiti with straight up house paint that he needs a bucket with. Like, that's not how. So if you get caught, you just have to dump a whole bucket of paint. It's like Looney Tunes.
Like, I mean, it's like suburban graffiti, right? They don't know what they're doing. So yeah, it's like Wile E. Coyote. I feel like you would have thought, like, if I told you, oh yeah, Pauly Shore was in this movie, you would have guessed that he would be the funny one. But he's not, because Charlie Schlatter is the one who's walking around, a teenager walking around smoking a cigar and talking like George Burns.
Anything else you want to know, Professor? Don't hesitate to ask.
So Pauly Shore is just kind of there in front around this maniac. who is also dating one of the grandson's classmates. I mean, he is in college, not high school, and they don't have sex because I think even in 1988, they were like, we can't have George Burns fuck a college freshman in his grandson's body. Like, we can't do that. That's too twisted. But there is, you know, there is this like romantic plot line where George Burns in this 18-year-old's body knows some facts about Harry S. Truman because George Burns knew Harry S. Truman. And this girl is like weirdly horny for Harry S. Truman facts. So like, she's super interested. She's like, oh, he's so old fashioned and interesting. And that when they finally, spoiler alert, they switch bodies back at the end of the movie. When they do that, Charlie Schlatter is like, you got to tell me everything you know about Harry Truman. Cause this girl is, I guess, going to fuck me because I know about Harry Truman. It's crazy. but it's crazy, but none of it has anything to do with Pauly Shore. So we need to move on. I will say there's a story from the Spin article where he says that at the premiere of 18 Again, one of the grips came up to him and said, and offered him some shrooms. And he hadn't really taken shrooms before. So he took a bunch and he said, a half hour later, I'm fucking freaking out. I'm thinking like George Burns, he's dying. He's handing me the comedy baton. And I wanted to quote that because George, that was in 1988 and George Burns did not die until 1996. So the next role is a season 6 episode of Seen Elsewhere, called Down and Out on Beacon Hill. Pauly plays a character named Frankie, who is a goth punk some kind of alt scene kid who's visiting his sickly. He's visiting St. Elsewhere. His girlfriend is there dying of goth disease. I guess they don't really say what it is. I guess maybe it's tuberculosis because she's coughing a lot. And at one point she coughs up blood at a couple points, she coughs up blood, but they never disclose what her illness is, her affliction. And, you know, she's like, they're both very blasé about the fact that she might die. I think this is interesting because I think it's the only time I've seen Pauly Shore in a dramatic role. There are parts that are sort of funny. Like, there's an exchange with the doctor where the doctor's like,
listen, you might get by without the transfusion, but if the bleeding doesn't stop, you're dead.
Gratefully.
Now you're making cheap rock and roll jokes?
What are you talking about?
But I mean, for the most part, it's kind of played seriously. And there's a part where they throw a party for Annette, the girl, and his other punk friends show up and they're like slam dancing in the hospital room. And then the doctor comes in and finds her dead with like blood all over her pillow. And the doctor is like angry and he's like,
she's not breathing. Annette?
Dead? Is she dead? Hey, wait, leave her alone. Leave her alone already.
You know, I don't believe you. You're blasting your music and dancing and the whole time she's just lying there?
Hey, Annette wanted us to have a great time.
You just let her die.
It was gonna happen anyway.
What if medical technology made a breakthrough? What if we found a cure for her disease?
She's only dead.
Don't you care? Don't you feel anything?
So that's, you know, like in another dimension of the Pauly-verse, Pauly Shore won an Emmy for that appearance.
I don't know. I don't know if that happened in any universe. Can I just say that goth Pauly Shore is a really good way to describe me?
You got to do your hair like he does it, because he basically...
Well, not specifically this character, just the descriptive term goth Pauly Shore.
Right. But I mean, this character, he's got the mop on top because Pauly's not going to, you know,
yeah, he he's will not sacrifice the
lose
box.
The moneymaker for a Saint Elsewhere role. He's like, you know, like Cesar Romero. Like, no, I'm not shaving the fucking mustache to play this stupid clown. So he just they like put up his hair, his mop, like a makeshift mohawk, but it's very clearly curly long hair just put up. It's a look. It works. So now we're in 1989. I promise we're rounding the corner here. So this is an interesting one. He played Craig, the character Craig, in a CBS TV special called What's Alan Watching? This is a hard one to explain. It was, I think, probably intended to be a pilot, but they kind of put it out as a TV special. And it didn't, I don't think the ratings were very good. So that was also just where it ended. But there seems to be a little bit of a, like, it's on YouTube, and the YouTube videos that I found, a lot of people were like, I've been looking, you know, I watched this in 1989. I've been looking everywhere for this. It's actually pretty interesting, like formally interesting, and sort of, it's pretty funny. Fran Drescher's in it. Eddie Murphy's in it. A bunch of like recognizable people. Like, you can tell that they put some money into it. But so it's about this kid named Alan who lives in Philadelphia. He's a senior in high school and he watches TV all the time. And it's sort of like this slice of life about him and his anxieties and, you know, his family situation. And like, sometimes it's taking place in the real world and sometimes it's showing what he's watching on TV, kind of in a way that reminds me of the Weird Al movie UHF. It has that kind of like cutaway gag kind of feel to it, where it's like, now we're in the story and now here's what's on TV. And it's like a docudrama about James Brown with Eddie Murphy playing James Brown, like he did on SNL. And watching this was one that I had on in the background. I hadn't started scrubbing for Pauly yet. And I was watching it and I was like, I don't know what this is about. Like, where is Pauly Shore? Why am I watching this? The opening scene is like Alan watching a commercial with a woman showering and he's having this interactive sexual fantasy. And I'm like, why am I watching this boy jack off to the TV? But after a while it ended up kind of like, I got more and more into it. And like, there were some pretty funny parts. Like, there was a tell all documentary about Mr. Ed, that said he had affairs with Joan Baez and Mama Cass Elliot and Annette Funicello. And I feel like that was kind of the moment where that won me over. And then let me tell you, when Pauly shows up, he shows up with a vengeance, because this Alan kid is watching, he's having this like imagined conversation with this girl he has a crush on who is somehow on his TV.
Isn't she great? She's going to Wisconsin too.
No, I'm not. I'm staying here and going to West Philly.
Oh.
If you're going to Wisconsin, there's really no point in asking me out, Alan, because there's a chance that I might really like you.
There is?
Sure. But you might as well just forget about it, because who needs a long-distance relationship when there's plenty of good-looking guys here in town?
Hey, dude, have like the kill time in Wisconsin.
And Pauly like leans into the, like suddenly he's in the frame. And he's, you know, supposed to be like the hunk that she's dating that Alan can't compete with. It is very funny.
It's probably the last time we'll ever see Pauly in the hunk role.
Right. Because even though the weasel is like very horny and, you know, sometimes like I don't think does like terribly. He does OK with women, but they always have boyfriends who are hunks who like chase him. So like even if he's kind of hitting it off with a woman, there's usually some hunk who's going to kick his ass. So, yeah, this is Pauly getting to be the hunk for once instead of the guy whose ass is going to be kicked. And it also feels very proto. This part of you start to, because he's kind of like a surfer dude, which is weird because again, this show takes place in Philadelphia. So I don't know who in Philadelphia is as Southern California as Pauly Shore clearly is.
It could be like skate culture too.
Yeah, that is true. Because I mean, like, this was kind of, you know, because of MTV and everything, you could be the Pauly Shore of Philadelphia, or, you know, wherever, Williamson, Michigan. I don't think we had a Pauly Shore, but maybe we did. And I wasn't,
unfortunately,
you know,
I used to wear spandex pants and tie scarves to my legs. So I don't know. Was I the Pauly Shore?
I think you were the Pauly Shore. I think there's a situation where, like, if there's no Pauly Shore in the group, then the Pauly Shore is you. I think a couple more roles here. Here's a quick one. He played a character named Captain in an episode of Married with Children. I did not watch this in full. I did, however, look at a couple clips on YouTube and got the gist. Basically, Pauly is the manager of a fast food restaurant where Al Bundy gets a second job. And also, he's basically the weasel.
You got a lot of unhappy passengers out there, crewman Bundy.
Talk to me like a person.
Oh, like old dude? I had to leave the bridge to tell you this, but we've had a lot of complaints about this burger.
I mean, by 89, I think, you know, this is like, he's developed this character in stand-up. He's already on the cusp of getting totally Pauly. You know, I think this character is definitely taking shape.
Partially Pauly.
He was in a movie called Lost Angels, also in 1989. Couldn't find it. Right. but his role in Lost Angels was just kid number three. So I don't think it's worth talking about. He doesn't even have a name. I was able to find the TV movie Dream Date, which he's in. This is one that I scrubbed through, and I got good at, like, scrubbing through a video and seeing Pauly Shore. You know, it's like, I'm scrubbing. And then there's, you know, a stony, crusty dude with the mop on top. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And that's where I hit play. So Dream Date has been preserved by a YouTube account called Black Film History. And I'd like to formally apologize to Black Film History for involving them in this. But here's the synopsis from YouTube. When gorgeous Danny Fairview, played by Tempest Bledsoe from The Cosby Show, is asked out on a date by the star of the football team, Jim Parker, played by Kadeem Hardison, she dreams of the perfect evening, dancing, dining, and a little romance. Her overprotective father, Bill, played by Clifton Davis, however, has other ideas. Bill secretly follows Danny on her date to make sure Jim doesn't put the moves on his little girl. What follows is a series of hilarious mishaps involving a crazed movie freak, Richard Mall, a heavy metal rocker, Pauly Shore, and Jim's jealous ex-girlfriend who will try anything to get her boyfriend back. And so Pauly shows up. If you want to see this scene, he shows up about an hour in. I don't know what the context is, because again, I didn't watch this in full, but the dad, Clifton Davis, he's followed his daughter to her school, and he's hiding in her locker for some kind of hijinks reasons. And Pauly hears him in his locker, and he's like this metalhead, and he believes that his locker is possessed by the devil.
Let's make a deal.
I've heard about your deals, man.
You open the door, and I'll get you an A in shop. Have all your detentions erased. Have Barry Manilow possessed. And I'll turn Vice Principal Downey into a tennis ball.
Make it a frog, you know, so I can dissect him in biology.
Fine, anything else?
Well, can I get, like, all of Motley Crue's chicks?
Done. Now open up.
No, I really can't.
Whoa, wow, look at all this junk food in here.
My Twinkies! No, don't eat my Twinkies! Don't... Don't mess with the devil, kid.
That's the premise of the scene.
I just want to know where this school was where they had adult man-sized lockers.
I don't know, because I feel like ours were too small even to shove a scrawny kid in them.
I had like half a locker when I was a senior. It was just like the little, like, it was like we had a top and a bottom. Couldn't fit a full man in there.
Yeah, it's because there was a rash of dads spying on their daughters by being crammed in the lockers.
Yeah, so for safety, they had to make the locker smaller.
Just two more here before we're pretty much done. So he was a character named Nicky in a movie called Wedding Band. That It's another movie that I basically scrubbed through. It's about, like, from what I can tell, it's about the trials and tribulations of a wedding band. Feels kind of to me like a proto Wedding Singer, the Adam Sandler movie. Paulie's character, Nicky, wants to leave the wedding band to start his own metal group. And probably his biggest scene is his band is rehearsing their own music, and they're in this suburban neighborhood and getting shut down by the cops. And Penelope Spheris of Decline of Western Civilization / Wayne's World fame plays his mother. So that's kind of an interesting little connection.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, you've been busted again?
What is going on here? Why did you boys stop rehearsing? And what are the police doing here?
We got another complaint, ma'am.
Yeah, well, this is my house, and I give these boys my permission to rehearse their musical instruments on my property.
Do you think she made Paulie headbang so much that it hurt his neck?
I feel like Paulie is too chill to bitch about that. You know, like, I think that's one of the many differences between him and Mike Myers.
He's less stiff. I feel like it wouldn't bother him as much.
There's a movie called Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, that the Eric's Revenge subtitle just hit me when I read it out loud. That's such a stupid name. So that's 1989.
Eric.
Yeah. Such a threatening name. Paulie's character works at the mall at a yogurt stand. I really skipped past all of the slashing. All I know is there's a scene toward the end where he has to distract someone using the mall's CCTV feed. He has to distract a security guard. So his way of distracting it is very weasel. It's like very like dancing oriented. And then at one point, he pulls his pants down and exposes his bare ass. So if you want to see Pauly Shore's ass, this is one of at least two opportunities that I know of to do so. I think he survives. So depending on your position, either unfortunately or fortunately, we do not get to see a cool slasher movie death scene with Pauly Shore. And then my favorite pre-weasel piece of content is a video called Rock and Read. This was a children's home video where, according to IMDb, a kid band plays sing-along pop rock covers of famous lullabies like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Paulie, as the host of the special, occasionally pops in to teach the viewers some words from the songs. Also, here's an interesting thing. The son of Donovan, like Mellow Yellow, Sunshine Superman, Hurdy Gurdy Man Donovan, plays the band's chauffeur.
Donovan of I Love and, My Shirt fame.
Some famous... right. And some of the performances are by pretty famous people, like Susanna Hoffs from the Bangles does Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. De La Soul does I'm a Little Teapot. This is like... I texted Callie about this because, Callie, you're a big fan of low-budget 80s and 90s children's content. And so I was like, if you watch one of these pre-weasel things that I'm putting in the Google Doc, you should watch this one because this is like right in your Q zone.
Yeah. And it was indeed the only one I watched, but I really liked it. I really, really liked it. I like how he talks to the kids. I like how he'll be like,
okay, look, like little dudes. Okay, now we're going to learn what Rock and Read is all about.
Ready, dude.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to sing some songs that have like some very special words. But the thing is, you can't go anywhere. You got to watch the screen and look, repeat after me, all right?
All okay, right.
Okay, here's the first word.
He always calls them, okay, you guys. It's funny.
Yeah. It's sort of like on the same level as them. He talks to them as a peer, which I think, you know, is similar to Totally Pauly. I feel like it's a little bit of a backhanded compliment, and I don't mean it that way, but I was watching this and feeling like there is an alternate universe in which Pauly Shore was a very successful children's entertainer. Like, he could have easily been like a Steve from Blue's Clues type, where he's like a sort of alternative guy who also just has an innate appeal to children and is good at talking to them. I think that could have been a lane for him. It probably wouldn't have resulted in him, you know, meeting the Barbie twins or whatever, and like falling in love with a porn star and all the other, you know, the shit that happened. But But it could have been, you know, it'd be a living.
I love children's media. This has kind of like a proto, like, Yo Gabba Gabba feel to it, too, especially with De La Soul. I mean, they don't appear in it, but their voices are using it. It's really right. cool. And I love the line where they're talking about cookies, and he says,
"Dude, can you stop eating the cookies? Can you just chill out on the munch?"
I say that to my cats now. Because my one cat, well, both of them, you know, like, cats always want more snacks. And my girl cat is always just like, she eats way too much and then she throws up because she doesn't know how to stop. So when she's asking for more food, I'll just be like, "Can you chill out on the munch?"
So that brings us up to what I'm going to call peak Weasel. You know, this is the point where he's going to get on MTV and is going to blow up and become the Pauly Shore that we all at least know. And hopefully by the end of this series, hopefully you'll come to love like we do. So I think that's where we're going to leave it today. We're going to, and next time we're going to talk about Totally Pauly. We're going to talk about his comedy album, Future of America. And we're going to talk about his HBO special, Pauly Does Dallas. And that will kind of be like the last bit of groundwork before we get into Encino Man and Class Act in March. So thank you for coming on this journey with us. Like I said, I know nobody asked for this, but I think it'll be fun. I'm having fun already. So hopefully.
Yeah, I'm having so much fun. This is almost one of the first times I've ever had fun doing anything on this show. It's the first time this doesn't feel like a task.
We're usually like, how can we torture ourselves? You know, like, again, like Callie said in the beginning, one of the first things we did on our podcast was read all four Kiss biographies. So there's always an element of like, what's the most miserable thing we can put ourselves through in public? And this has a little bit of that, but the thing is, we're sickos and watching Jury Duty is fun for us. So I think that's...
Oh, man. I cannot wait to watch Jury Duty again because you didn't watch it. Jury Duty was the one that I watched it really late at night because I do a lot of stuff late at night. And I texted you like, why haven't we seen this? Pauly Shore is in a milkman uniform as a stripper and he drinks the milk and Tia Carrera is in it. And then you didn't text me back until the morning and you were just like, that's why we didn't watch it. Those reasons outlined.
Well, now I'm going to watch it and you can watch along with us. Some of these movies are kind of, honestly, we should have done this a year ago because I feel like a lot of these movies were on streaming more accessible then and now they aren't. But you know what? I spent $5 on Encino Man on Apple TV Plus, and I don't regret it. It's one of the best $5 I've spent. So as always, we'd love to hear from you about any of the stuff we've talked about, or about any of the stuff we're going to talk about in the future. If you've got something to say about Encino Man or Class Act or Pauly Shore in general, reach out to us. I like having a conversation, gives us something to talk about, a way to, you know, feel like we're engaging with people and not just recording our conversations like Frank Zappa. So you can, there's a few ways you can reach us. You can reach us on Instagram at Dystopian Graham. You can reach us on YouTube at Dystopian Dance Party. You can leave a comment on our website, which is dystopiandanceparty.com. And you know what? This email as of now does not exist, but I'm going to create a bespoke email address just for this show. So if you want to email us, by the time this comes out, you will be able to email us at heybuddy@dystopiandanceparty.com. So if you want to drop us a line, just say, hey buddy, @dystopiandanceparty.com. And that's it. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Bye.
Girl, man, this is a song about a girl, bro, that came out to Hollywood to make it from the farm. She's totally fresh, maybe she's from Atlanta, the Midwest. You know she's milked cows, though, dude. She's totally clean. It's called Lisa, Lisa, the one I adore. I'm a stony, crusty dude with a mop on top. My melon's fully tweed, but I'll never stop.